Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. 19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Living life as a gringo, where you question where you fit in every time you mingle. They say you do this with not enough that. My rapping is really bad. This life as a gringo.
Yes, hello and welcome to another episode of Life as a Gringo. I am Dramos, of course. It is Thursday, so it means it's time for our Thursday Trends episode. And helping me break down some of these trending stories, he is a friend of the show, Matthew Torres, a.k.a. the Storytime Guy. How you feeling, my bro?
Good, man. It's good to be on here. I'm excited. There's a lot to talk about today, so I think we're going to have a good discussion.
Yes.
And have some good stuff and sad stuff. You know, as the news always tends to be. There's good and there's sad.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy to talk about the sad stuff, but I'm interested to talk about the sad stuff.
Yeah, I think that it feels like, you know, heavy stuff, but at the same time,
it's important.
Yeah, it's important to be informed on so many different things that are happening. You know, you and I were kind of talking off mic before we pressed record, how I was saying, like, certain weeks there's like not much going on, but this week was one of those ones where it was like, for time constraints, I had to kind of like X out certain stories, and like there's a guilt of feeling like, man, I'm not bringing them the attention that they deserve to have, you know?
I get you. And at the same time, it's like, there's always next week too. A lot of these news cases tend to like continue into weeks. Like something will start. And so you usually can, you know, wait another week. And, you know, if it's still in, you know, it's, and the thing is too, it's like when there's so much to talk about, you have to choose the most important things to talk about, you know?
Sure,
and sometimes, you know, the little things like this old lady, you know, saved a dog from getting hit by a car. Great story. But, a guy climbing on top of an ancient 1,000-year-old pyramid, you know, just the second person to do that in the last month.
Right. Just that's definitely something we're gonna get to. Yeah, I mean, there's always another Trump court case happening, so we can save
for
next week. So, but man, on the topic of the things that we're gonna get into today, you know, when it comes to, you know, some of this nonsense and the heaviness, you know, you mentioned this ancient pyramid in Mexico that like tourists just seem to have no respect for whatsoever. We'll talk about a recent occurrence that happened there. And I think just the larger sort of, you know, conversation around people not having respect for our history, essentially. Right. Yeah. And I think that these are symbols of that. And beyond that, we'll also talk about a high school in New Jersey where you had an adult woman actually pose as a student. And there are some really creepy theories on exactly what she was trying to do while there. So we'll talk a bit about that. And then, you know, we'll talk about Biden and his administration proposing to let people use Hispanic or Latino as a race on the census, which I've talked about a ton on the show. This is something that is incredibly important, as frivolous as it sounds. So we'll talk about why.
Yeah.
And then, you know, another devastating story that, you know, we need to just keep driving home, because, you know, change needs to happen. And it's the death of Tyree Nichols in Memphis, you know, another young black man killed at the hands of police. And we'll talk about kind of the latest on that story and get into it. And then, you know, on the positive side of things, because you always try to find something positive, you know, for our Mijente. it's tough. One, yeah. Yeah, but for our Mijente segment, we'll talk about an actress who actually is setting a record for having four movies that were grossing billions of dollars at the box office, and she is a Latina. So amazing, amazing stuff. So we'll celebrate her in our Mijente segment. But first, let's just get into this nonsense. Let's dive into the heaviness in a segment we call For the People in the Back.
Say it louder for the people in the back. Back. Say it louder for the people in the back. Say it louder for the people in the back.
All right, so let's start first in New Jersey, in New Brunswick, New Jersey specifically, which is actually a town that's about 15 minutes away from my studio. So I'm very familiar with this this town. It is a place that I grew up going to a lot in my late teens, early 20s, especially when I was first starting to DJ. That was one of my major cities that I used to hit. So this one, very much close to home in a kind of an array of reasons, right? So in this story, you have this adult woman who has been charged after posing as a student at a high school in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And it's important to say that this is a high school where the majority of the student body are Latino, right? And and they are also collectively, as students, speaking out against the Board of Education for a number of reasons, because first and foremost, they are concerned, right? They say that even though the woman, her last name is Shin, is no longer a student at this high school, she can possibly use their information to target them in a possible human trafficking scheme, which is kind of what people are thinking was the reason why this woman was doing so, right? And the town's Board of Education is actively actually barring them from speaking out at official meetings, citing some nonsensical loophole that basically says that speakers have to register in advance to speak at meetings. And the students, obviously, given the story just happening, did not have time to do so. So it just seems like it's more ways for people to be silenced. And while they are not divulging any more information as far as the Board of Ed is concerned on the motives behind Shin's decision to enroll, you know, there are cases that have happened in the past. This is the other theory, where adults have enrolled as students for better access to scholarships and college opportunities, right? But they also say that trafficking, human trafficking and traffickers actually enrolling in high school and colleges is becoming more prevalent globally. And they talk about how this high school in New Brunswick is particularly vulnerable for a number of reasons, because students actually accuse the town's Board of Education of turning a blind eye to their issues in general, again, with the overwhelming majority of the school student body being Latino. And then this kind of... because I want to get a lot of the details out here. This kind of puts a hole in the theory that maybe this woman was just looking for an opportunity for colleges, because they reveal that the New Brunswick High School, their scores are pretty atrocious, right? They scored just one out of 10 points based on test scores and graduation rates, right? And the New Jersey average in proficiency among students is 44%, but at that particular high school, it is just 8%. And similarly, the state's average in reading proficiency is 57%. New Brunswick High School, that number is just 29%, right? So if this person was, in fact, trying to get some sort of scholarship, get into a college, I don't think that they would pick a school where these students are obviously very much underfunded and underperforming. And the last thing that they're saying is that traffickers may have set their sights on New Brunswick High because of its large minority population, large class sizes, and low test scores. And again, they say if access to scholarships and other colleges and other college resources was a priority, it would make little sense to attend one of the lowest scoring schools in the state. Now, all right, I threw a lot of information, but all really relevant to paint this picture, because this is a really fucking scary story, right? Like, if this does, in fact, prove to be the case that this person may have been trying to, you know, groom kids for human trafficking, because there's also reports that the woman was actually still texting students after she had been found out. So they're saying that if, again,
how long was she there?
It was a month, I believe. I believe they caught her within the first month that she was there. So
she was there for a month, though.
Yeah, it was something close to a month before they actually found out.
Like, to me, it's like, so I'm a substitute teacher. That's my day job. I substitute usually 1 to 2 days every single week for the whole school year at the same high school, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, as an educator, it worries me that yes, some adults look young, but it worries me that this took that long to be, like, figured out.
And I just confirmed, by the way, 30 days. She was there for 30 days before being found out.
That's terrifying. Like, even as a substitute teacher, when, like, someone's like, hey, this person's not in our class anymore, or hey, I'm joining your class, I double check that with the attendance. I make sure that this person is going here. There's for the school to be like, give that little of a shit. And granted, I work at a charter school, so it's nicer. You know, uniforms and everything, and security guards and everything. But I've worked at a bad school. I've worked at a middle school, and it was in a bad neighborhood. They had terrible rates. You know, it was similar to this. It was really, really low education, really low test scores and all that stuff. And even then, they have high security. They have security guards. They have hall monitors. The teachers, they work with what they have. So even despite these small budgets, they care. And usually in bad neighborhoods, they tend to have smaller classes because, at least in the one I did, because you can't have like 30 problem children in the same room with each other. You can't even have really 20 of them because it's dangerous, you know?
Right.
So, like, for me to, as just as an like educator, that scares the crap out of me, because it's like, what are you guys doing to this point to let that happen, to let a full grown adult get away with this? And like, it worries me so, because students are going to figure this out before anyone else. And if, like, she was like talking to people and texting people and giving their number, these, like, they're not idiots. Kids, some kids are silly and, you know, they don't think things through. But there's a lot of kids that are smart enough to realize this. And my fear is that the students realize this a lot sooner, which is probably why they didn't want them to talk, if I had to take a guess. You know, I guarantee there's one student's like, hey, I told the administration that girl, I thought she was an adult and no one listened to me, like, 3 days after she got here. So I have a feeling this is going to look really, really bad for the school in general, because that is unacceptable to happen.
Yeah. I think you hit on a couple different things. I think the main focus that I want to kind of take on it right now is like, the ineptitude of the Board of Education. And I think that there's like a larger conversation, because to your point, in an area where or a school specifically that's testing low, why would you have large class sizes at that point, right? Because obviously, like, these children are having trouble with the standardized testing that you are giving them, right? And I'm not blaming the kids. It's as a educator, you know, you have to figure out a way to get through to your students, right? That's part of your job. And it just shows that, you know, they don't give a fuck about these kids, right? And then to your point, that they're citing some, like, asinine rule about registering in advance. Like, I don't think anybody had in the, like, you know, rule book for board meetings that, like, hey, we do this in case of adult posing as a student, right? These are like unprecedented things. And if you genuinely cared about these kids and cared about their safety and wanted to hear their concerns to give them a better experience, why would you be trying to silence them? And I think, you know, to your point, there probably is something more sinister there, where somebody really dropped the ball more than just the obvious, you know, where maybe it was brought to educators' attention, like you're posing, you know, and
you really have to hope no one's involved in it,
right?
You know,
right?
Like, if we're really thinking about this into a thing, like, if she got in, whatever, the fear is, so she's going to go to all these teachers, and all these teachers are not going to notice that she's a grown woman, and none of them are going to say anything with administration. None of them are going to check these things, like, that's really weird that none of these teachers bothered to be like, oh, there's a new student, let me go double check. Mm-hmm. None of them. She was there for 30 days. She had to be, if it's high school or any school, at least six classes. I mean, six teachers and administrators walking around because she had to be there during lunch. Mm-hmm. And no one, like most of these teachers and everyone, they know their names after a few weeks. Like,
right.
It's for this to happen. You're like, and especially when the middle of the school year, I guess this would have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it just happened recently. So we're in January or February, technically right now at this point.
And I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but like, damn, like you guys really dropped the ball on this.
Well, because they're basically saying that she took advantage of a loophole that the school has essentially for new students, that they're not requiring certain paperwork right away for them to get into a school to get registered and all of those different things, right? I'd imagine there is, whether it's for like kids who are transferring or maybe you have some people who are, you know, undocumented or whatever it might be, and they might be making a concession. But I would think the bare minimum would be like, where is it? Did you have a meeting with her parents? You know what I mean? Like, who was there's something larger going on here, right? Like, there had to have been a meeting with somebody who was allegedly their parents. And if there wasn't, that seems like a really sort of obvious misstep that happened, that, you know, what did this girl walk in by herself with these papers and say, hey, I'm a student, sign me up. You know what I mean? Like, there's obviously somebody dropped the ball on the even just administration side, you know? And I would question if everybody would be so lax about it if it was a white school in a wealthy area, right? Would they be trying to be silenced like that? Would they even, you know, would we have to go to the local news in order for these kids to have their voices heard, you know? And I think the answer is an unequivocal hell no. Like, that would never happen.
Yeah, they don't want to hear about these stories. And the worst part about it is that the children are going to suffer for this at the end of the day. Because this is going to come out of the tax dollars. This is going to come out of the school. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, you guys aren't doing your job. And they're going to cut funding for it. Which that doesn't affect it. I mean, yeah, some of them are going to get paychecks. But more importantly, those students are going to get an even worse education. And no teacher is going to want to work at the school where there is secretly an adult there that no one noticed. Because then you're going to be like, well, now I'm on guard and I don't want to get... So no one's going to work at these schools. So it's really one of those things that you're like, the person who did this, the woman, whatever her name is,
Shin, I think is her last name.
Yeah, Shin. She knew what she was doing. Mm-hmm. There's no way she knew damn well what she was doing. She knew why she was doing it. She knew how to do it. She knew how to get away with it.
Right.
And it worries me because I'm like, if this is a trafficking scheme,
mm-hmm.
how much research is going into this? Mm-hmm. And is there more to it? Because if this is just the beginning, if this is just like, hey, you know, like, where this wasn't just one woman working alone.
Yeah.
There's more to this, especially if it's tracking. So it's really worrisome because they're like, oh, we're going to, you know, we're going to keep an eye out. We're going to, you know, we think this is trafficking. So we're going to put extra. No, you're not.
Right.
Like, what, you guys are going to hire one security guard who's not going to care. They're going to do their job. They're going to be standing outside. And if anyone does get kidnapped, they're just going to go, license plate, call 911. Like,
right. You know, well, also, it shouldn't be up to the kids to voice concern, like, hey, they have our information. The adults should be like thinking to themselves, like, we should be protecting these kids who possibly gave their information to this person.
Yeah.
And the person's name is Haijiang Shin, you know, for clarification. But like, last thing I'll say on it, just because it hits so close to home, like, New Brunswick, New Jersey is a major city. You have Rutgers University, which is a very prominent college that attracts people from all over the country, right? And that is in the city of New Brunswick. To me, there's no reason why a major city like that, that brings in so many tax dollars, should have such a shitty school system to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't make any sense. And especially when you look at, you know, that's a city where the haves and the have-nots are brutally on display, where you have the areas closest to the college are have a fucking Whole Foods, right? But then the area where these kids are going to high school, you know, is the hood, right? And again, it just shows you where the priority is. You know, we have to make sure the area around the college is, you know, presentable. So Becky and Susie coming from, you know, Des Moines, Iowa, will want to spend their money here at the college. But, you know, these kids who are getting a public school, you know, education, let's just give them the scraps. And I think it speaks to that.
I live in Los Angeles, man. Trust me. I drive by USC fairly often. I can tell you, they built this giant new stadium where WrestleMania is going to be at.
Right.
You know, this whole big stadium. You walk two blocks away from there, there's homeless encampments. There's gang shootings. Mm-hmm. Like, they said, we put all our money in the moment this border stops, ain't no money going nowhere.
Right. Yet, right.
Hit around the, it's crazy to think that like there's these schools that you have this like, where's the money going? And yeah. I guarantee you their biggest fear is probably to be audited because that school, I guarantee you, is probably funding money side of the actual budget. They're like, all right, well, we're going to audit you guys. And I'm like, oh, God, please don't. You're going to find out that the principal makes, you know, like six figures a year.
Yeah. And it's sad because the kids are going to be the ones who suffer. And it's the kids that need the most extra help, you know, who are not getting it. Right. And that's the sad story of this country. Now, we are getting into it, man. Let's take a quick break right now, though, and then we'll be right back.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma. Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling, and it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me? Sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura Podcast Network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
All right, we are back now in Mexico, where I know you have family. Yeah. You have another tourist deciding that they should climb up one of the ancient pyramids. And this happened at the Chichen Itza pyramid. Mm-hmm. And this happened last weekend. You had a Polish tourist who disrespected the temple of Kukulkan by trespassing and climbing up the stairs. And this is according to the Mexican Daily Post, right? And the tourist said, quote, he wanted to take pictures up on the temple top for social media, right? Now, shortly after, the Polish tourist was escorted down from the ancient Mayan pyramid by two security guards. Of course, they told him that he had violated the rules of the pyramid. And this is a Mayan site dating back to the 5th century AD. And this is now a very important place in Mayan culture. It's the city of the water sorcerers, you know, deeply important. It was even named one of the new seven wonders of the world. And then for all of this, you know, the onlookers, of course, who are, I'm sure, from the area, were not happy about what this man was doing. They were cursing at him, yelling at him. He was replying that he made a mistake. And then somebody took it upon themselves to enact some violence on this man and whack him in the head with a stick. and then he replied, "I'm Polish," as he rubs his head. Okay, so I think that I don't like. I feel like people are going to tell us that we're making a whole lot out of nothing, right? Obviously, in anywhere.
I disagree. Disagree to that.
Yeah, but I mean, in the smallest form of it, it's disrespectful to go on a historical site and do something you're not supposed to do, right? Those places are being protected for a reason, and there are rules to help maintain them, you know, this long so they can exist for generations to come, right?
Yeah.
But beyond that, to me, it's the larger conversation of like these people, you know, who are white and have grown up, you know, under the mindset of European colonization, do not view us as valuable and think that anything of ours is essentially for their taking or that they can do whatever they want with it. And again, somebody might say I'm making a whole lot out of nothing, but to me, this is something that is so ingrained and embedded in them that it might even be subconsciously, like even if he's saying he didn't know any better, like that's that subconscious white supremacy that you think you can just go do whatever the fuck you want and rules don't apply to you, especially in a country that I'm sure he would consider to be lesser than, you know, where he's from.
If to me, it's the hypocrisy of it all. I've been to Europe. I went into London. I went to churches. My wife's been to Europe and several places in France and Spain. And the rules they have on how you treat churches, you get arrested. You go to jail if you disrespect those. And you're lucky if someone doesn't beat you. If you were to disrespect a church, if you were to walk in there, half the churches, I think even most of them, you can't walk in there with shorts. They don't allow it.
Yeah.
Half the time, they're like, no, women especially, you got to wear the long dresses, you got to cover your body. That's disrespectful. Yep. That's shameful. And to be from Poland and to have this mentality that like everyone's like, oh, this is a big deal. It is a big deal.
Yeah.
This is thousands of centuries of culture and respect and history to it. People have died on those pyramids. This is a serious thing. And people call them pyramids. There were palaces. People lived in these things. Kings ruled here. You were walking on a freaking castle, man. And that's how you treat it? You don't go to London. You don't start walking all over the castles and the things. You don't go to the Shakespearean theater and start climbing on shit. He would never do that there. But he does it here because he has no respect for it. He goes, oh, there's stones, whatever. Or I'm in, you know, Mexico, no big deal. I'll just walk all over this stuff. You know, he had no remorse for it. He was like, oh, you caught me, but I got my picture. Because I guarantee you, he still uploaded that picture. So it's like, that's what bothers me is that it is a big deal because there's this idea that, you know, we can say what it is. He's racist. He was like, there's no like sugarcoating him. Is he hateful towards it? Maybe not. But does he have disrespect for this because they're not him? Absolutely. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. He wouldn't be doing this shit anywhere else. And the lady that did this, what, 2-3 months ago, it was the same thing. They have no respect for this culture. They have no respect for the people. And then when they get attacked or hurt, they're like, oh, poor me, you know?
Lady
that did she went into in Mexico, they were doing like this religious, like Santeria kind of sacrifice ceremony with the rooster. And they're like, hey, no phones, please be very respectful. She goes in there and she's like, they told me no phones, but I'm going to record it anyways.
Right.
And then she records everything. And then everyone's like, you're an asshole. And she's like, what did I do wrong?
Right.
It's like, no, you don't do this anywhere else. Why do you do this to us? But we know we know why they do this to us. So it's like, call a spade a spade. I think anyone that's like saying like, oh, this isn't a big deal story. If it happened once every a blue moon, whatever, one idiot. Mm-hmm. This is happening more and more, which goes to show that people that respect that they might have had is getting less and less. And if we don't speak up about this, it's going to get worse. So I think it is important that we bring up this thing because it is going to get worse. If we don't, like, look, let's be real here. If you don't make fun of someone, if you don't bring this to light, if you don't bring this to the public view and humiliate that person, that's the only way to stop it. If you want to, it's a very, messed up, maybe like kind of macabre way of looking at things, but that's the truth of it. Mm-hmm. People don't want to commit crimes because they're scared of getting caught. If we make that more of a thing, go, look at this idiot, I hope he loses his job kind of thing. Everyone else is going to go, oh shit, I don't want to do that. But if we go, oh, no big deal, he got hit with a stick, no big deal, ho, 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 they're going to go, okay, I'll do it. What do I got to lose?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I think this is something we need to talk about. Do need to make a big deal, because it's one of those like, we have to draw a line. If we don't draw a line, it's only going to get worse. So that was my rant for that.
No, I 100% agree. You know, I just think it's this disrespect that has consistently been seen, you know, when it comes to our stories, our history, and our artifacts, and I think our culture in general. You know, like, we are there to serve white people of the world, you know, or we are beneath them and they can kind of do whatever they please. And, you know, I think that, again, I think you made a great point about maybe he's not hateful, but he does have some underlying racism that made him feel so comfortable to commit such a bold act as climbing the pyramid, you know, especially when there are other people around and things like that. You know,
people were telling him, don't do this. And he kept doing it. And to me, I'm like, I hope, like, because I'm always about forgiveness also. I hope he learned his lesson. I hope he's like, damn, that was stupid of me. I would love for him to make a video and say, look, I did something stupid. I did something offensive. I did something racist. I am so sorry for this. I hope I'm an example of what not to do, of how to treat these people. Is that going to happen? We both know the answer to that.
No.
I wish, even from a personal level, I hope that just him himself in this humiliating experience is like, damn, I that was stupid of me. As opposed to what I fear is him going, man, those ignorant, dumb brown people beat the shit out of me for walking on their shitty castle. Like,
or look how violent they are, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. I just walked up brown some people. Steps and they beat me, you know? Right. Like, that's what I fear. Right. That's my fear. But that's also my hope, is that, you know, he learned something. And my fear is him, that he's just going to, you know, any racism he had is only going to grow from him being an idiot. So,
yeah. And listen, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. So, I mean, I think that guy that whacked him with the stick should be on salary as, like, you know, that's his job. He's just there to whack the shit out of people who get out of line.
Petty enough to do that. They'll be like, yeah, we'll make you the stick guy. That'll be your official job title. Yeah.
I'll donate to that GoFundMe to pay for that man's salary for the year. I'm down for that. But like, let's then move back into the States here, and something that on the surface seems frivolous, that's actually could be potentially incredibly important. And that is the Biden administration proposing to let people choose Hispanic or Latino as a race. Right. And for anybody not familiar, you know, you can pick Hispanic or Latino as an ethnicity when you do like a census form. But for race, you know, you have to choose, like, you know, white, black, or I personally pick other. I'm not sure what you normally would do in a situation like that.
It's white, black, indigenous, or other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it used to be worse. It used to be a lot worse than that. I mean, I mean, if you want to keep talking, I have very strong feelings about this.
Sure.
And it's, to me, it's just like, you know, if we're, before we continue all this, if I am not Latino, what race am I? Sure. I always hear people say Latino's not a race. What race am I?
Yeah. I've had this argument before, you know, where it's like, you know, somebody would be like, no, you would check white, you're white. But I don't have the full white experience, right? Like, and not to say that my complexion doesn't give me privilege at times, but it also doesn't give me the same free reign as white people. You know what I mean? So like, I can't subscribe to being white when I don't have the white experience, you know? And we'll kind of, let me kind of hash out some of the details here, because I want to get your perspective. But, you know, the administration has been reviewing its more than a quarter century old definitions of race and ethnicity, and is proposing to combine two questions about race and ethnicity into one on the census and in other government data collection. This is all according to NBC News. Now, the administration is also proposing a Middle Eastern or North African category, shortened to MENA. Currently, people of such origin are included in the white category, something people in the MENA category have advocated to be changed for 3 decades, right? Yeah. Now, according to the Pew Research Center, Mark Hugo Lopez, director of race and ethnicity research over there, he says, the nation does periodically examine how it asks about race and ethnicity, and the ways we report out those findings can be important. And then they go on to say in the article, evidence suggests that the current two-part question confuses many people who see race and ethnicity as similar. Right. Same. And they say, according to the group of experts that are studying the federal government's 1997 race and ethnicity standards. Now, they say in the 2020 census, the federal government had actually proposed refashioning the question on Hispanics and adding a meta checkbox. But those proposals were shelved during the Trump administration. Surprise, surprise. And the last thing I'll say on it is they say the proposed changes would affect the way the federal government captures race and ethnic information on the decennial census and also on surveys such as those done by the National Center for Health Statistics or the Department of Education. He added that its implications of research. He added that its implications for research organizations such as Pew Research, which uses the Census Bureau's data collection as a standard to weight public opinions and surveys. So he's basically saying that this would heavily impact the way that they research anything from our statistics around health concerns, our statistics around education. And even I have talked about this before, but there have been many articles that have brought up the point that we actually don't even have an accurate number on the topic of police brutality against Latinos, because many of those police officers will check the race of somebody as white who might have actually been Latino. So it causes havoc in us really knowing what may or may not be an issue in this country and being able to accurately address it. Now, I'd love to hear your take.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, it's not even and I hope that, like, not to look at this more cynical, but it's important for marketing. It's important for businesses to know this information. Sure. And like, I get both sides of it. And I'm this is just my opinion on it, but this is how I see it. Statistically, and I feel like the statistics aren't exactly, you know, favorable on it, but Latinos as a whole, we tend to be more liberal, more democratic.
Mm-hmm.
Depending where you're from, though, and I feel like a lot of Republicans don't, they go, oh, all Latinos everywhere, they're all left-wing liberals.
Right.
Not all of them.
No, we've seen that. Florida has been a great reminder of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Florida, Cuba, some parts of Mexico. There's a lot. I mean, Brazil, there's a lot of Latino nations and Latino people. I think the last I checked, the statistics were like 60% of Latino men are Democratic, but that still leaves 40% to be Republican. And I think the numbers for women are much higher. I think it's like 70-80% of Latino women are Democratic liberal. So, yeah, in that instance, so Republicans, this is the way I see it, is that they don't want us on the record because then our numbers are going to shoot through the roof. They're going to be like, oh, we're not like the biggest minority. We're a majority in a large part of the country. We're already majority. I mean, even with these rules that we have to identify, a lot of us have to identify as white. We're the majority in California now. We're the majority in, I believe, Texas. We're the majority in New Mexico. We're going to be the majority in a whole bunch of other states. And if they came on and said, hey, you're going to list yourselves as Latino, that number is going to shoot through the roof. And so what they were fearing of, like, oh, Latinos, they're not a big deal, that unites us. And I like, for people to say this isn't a big deal, it is a big deal because it's a unifying factor to us. We get to finally say proudly that we are all Latino, that we have to be treated as an equal group, that we are a united front. That is something nobody wants. If you're on top and second place is a mess, you don't want them uniting because that puts you at risk. And that's exactly how Latinos are. There's a lot of us. We're constantly growing at a very steady rate. Our grandparents did better than their parents. Our parents did better than our grandparents. We're going to do better than our parents. Our kids are going to do better than us. Not big leaps, but we're taking these steps forward where we're moving forward, we're being progressive, we're making more money. And if you're the right and conservative, you don't want that. You don't want you know, these people to outnumber you, who are eventually, you know. So to me, that's how I view people that are against it. And we saw it with Trump.
Yeah.
Why didn't he do this? Because he doesn't want them to. He doesn't want us, the Latinos, to be united. Because, look, our Latinos, we're all over the place. A lot of us can't even say that. There's so many of us that are like, no, we're not Latino. I'm not Latino. I'm Mexican. Or I'm not Latino. You know, like, that's what we're talking about, you stupid idiot. Like, I'm not saying your nationality, man. Like, keep up with the conversation.
Right.
But if we were to say, like, hey, did you know Latinos are this and this? They'd be like, okay, yeah, I'm Latino. Like, you know, and I think it's that one of that, you know, effects that there's that a lot of people are scared of because they don't want us to be like, hey, we're here. We're in charge. We're, you know, we demand respect because they don't want that. So I think that's kind of my opinion on all that. Like you said, like, this is like, and I know, trust me, I do content creation all the time where I talk about Latinos and, you know, everything. And there's so many people. Oh, I'm Latino and I don't care. I'm Hispanic and I don't care. I'm Mexican. I don't care about equal rights and stuff.
Right.
And I get that.
Sure.
I don't agree with it, but I get it. But for this to happen, it's going to be so important because it's the little things, man. It's the little things. Like, if you've ever been in a bad relationship, it's the little things that hurt you. It's the little ways that someone will look at you and talk down to you and, oh, you didn't get the trash. Yeah, I expected you not to take out the trash, whatever. Mm. It's, you know, mm-hmm. it's, oh, you didn't get the raise at your job. Yeah, I didn't really expect you. You're kind of quiet. It's these little things that get down mm-hmm. to you. And right. so when you're able to take these little things back, when you're able to say, look on a job resume for any job, regardless of what you're doing, and you're able to say, you're able to see white, black, indigenous, Asian, Latino. Mm-hmm. You're equals now. There's no longer, right. hey, are you Latino or Hispanic? Yeah. Okay, what race are you?
Right.
Motherfucker, I just told you.
right. Yeah. But I think to your point, even when you were just speaking to the marketing standpoint of things, like, this gives us a seat at the table, you know, far quicker and a far bigger voice, right? Because as you yeah. said, even with a lot of the sort of miscommunication that happens when people are filling out the census, you know, and the kind of skewed accuracy of what the census is, we're still a dominant factor in this country. So now with this being far more accurate and people really having the ability to be represented, we are going to become a far more powerful group in this country that then demands a certain amount of attention. And of course, politicians don't want to have to go and placate to another group, right? They're already pissed off that the black community is making them come to them and have conversations, right? So now to have to do this to another marginalized group that has that much power, you know, they don't want that at all. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's important for us to be seen in this way, because again, when you talk about things like medical issues and the studies that go behind that, like accurately knowing, oh, Latinos are affected by this, you know, medical condition at a larger number, helps in the future with, you know, doctors or with, you know, medications or just even help at the end of the day, you have a far more accurate picture as to what is happening to a particular community, you know, when you have accurate numbers, you know, accurate representation.
When it comes to that, so my wife is a nurse. So mm-hmm. when she was doing nursing school and everything, one of the things that really caught people off guard is that nurses have to be aware of stereotypes and racism uh-huh. going on within the real life, you know, the doctors and everything in community. And so they're like, hey guys, you know, black people, you tend to think that they're stronger, that so you give them less medication, like you look mm-hmm. at the thing. So don't do that. Treat them mm-hmm. the way you would treat any other patient, because that's a big problem for the black community, is that a lot of them go, oh, if the person was white in the same weight and height and symptoms, they would give them more pain medication.
Sure.
But for African-Americans with the same weight and height as a white guy or something, they would give them less, or they treat mm-hmm. you know, with less medication, because there's this subconscious, like, they're tough, they can deal with it. And the same goes for Latino men. Older Latino men have a very high rate of dying simply because, and this should surprise no one with a Latino father, they're stubborn. When they come in there and they say, hey, what's your, specifically the pain scale, 1 to 10, Latino men that are like over the age of 40, their pain scale is like 4 off usually. So mm-hmm. when a Latino man comes in, they go, they could break their leg and they'd be like, oh, I'm like a 4.
Yeah.
Like a 4. Like, okay. So they treat them like a 4. And then a lot of times they end up dying. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll have a fever of 105. They'll be like, no, I'm fine. And they end up dying because they refuse to say, like, I'm in a lot of pain. I'm dying. I'm going to, like, you know.
Right.
And so they treat them like, hey, when it comes to older Latino men, it's very similar for Asian men too, but especially with Latino men, if they're older, you have to accept their answer and then go above it, because they're usually gonna, especially if they're there with their wives. So they're taught, like, hey, when you're asking older Latino men, get the family out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Get the family out of the room and say, look, this is a risk for you if you aren't honest with us. And they tend to have more accurate answers that way, because, you know, Latino, especially older, they can't show weakness in front of their family and their wives.
Right.
They're the toughest, you know. So it's these things that, and this is important for that information, so we can see mm-hmm. this, because with this information, we get to go, yes, he marked off as Latino. Look at the rate of Latino men that are over the age of dying because of this, right?
Mm-hmm,
right
mm-hmm.
now, a lot of them I identify as white, and in which case the numbers are all skewed and it's all over the place. Yeah. And we don't get to help our people the way we should and need to. So this thing is really far reaching. It's the same with medical education. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many schools, scholarships. There's so many scholarships that are, you know, because a lot of white families are privileged. They get mm-hmm. the, you know, they have less scholarships. Well, if Latinos are identifying as white, guess what? They don't get access to scholarships that they drastically need.
Sure.
So this information, that, like, it really is far reaching, I think, more than people realize how much this is important for the advancement of our people to be treated with equality.
Well, 110%, you know, it's just kind of like, if you're if you're not using your voice, you're not going to be, you know, looked at, or you obviously you're not going to be heard, and nobody's going to pay attention to you. And something like the census and being able to check the appropriate box allows us to figuratively use our voice to make sure that we're being counted and seen, you know. Now, last thing we're going to talk about here as far as the heaviness goes, and I saved this one, you know, till last just because it is another just tragic story that really is just so incredibly heavy. But it is the death of Tyre Nichols. You know, he's the young black man from Memphis that was beaten by the police and died. And his man, the video was released this last week, so everybody was able to see what happened, you know. And we also had the charges being filed. So you had five officers, and they are black officers. It's important, I think, to notate that, because there are a lot of conversations happening, you know. But they were fired on January 20th. They were then indicted on seven counts each, including second-degree murder, aggravated assault, aggravated kidnapping with bodily injury, aggravated kidnapping in possession of a deadly weapon, official misconduct, and official oppression. Then two more officers, one white and one still not publicly identified, were put on leave alongside others to remain under internal investigation. And basically, all of these officers were a part of a unit that was called the Scorpion Unit, and it was a task force that was created to tackle rising crime in the city. It has been disbanded amongst public outcry, and the other obviously big news was because they were charged so quickly, right? That was the differentiation in this case, and rightfully so. Then they say, beyond the police, three Memphis fire department staffers have been terminated, and two Shelby County Sheriff's Department office deputies were put on leave for their parts in the case as well. So people are still getting, you know, reprimanded for this, rightfully so. There's still an investigation happening. But I think for a lot of people, first of all, in general, I think we're all tired of hearing about people dying at the hands of police unnecessarily, right?
Yeah.
Unarmed people, specifically unarmed black men, in this case, and a lot of the ones we're seeing on the news, you know, being murdered at the hands of police unnecessarily. And then, you know, the differences with this one is them being charged so quickly, but then also a lot of the conversation around the idea that five of the officers were in fact black that committed this heinous crime. And, you know, there's a lot of theories about if it was white officers, if they would have been charged this quickly. Sure, that's another conversation we could have. But I think it also, the larger, grander conversation about this is that when someone becomes a cop, it goes beyond their race, right? They end up becoming a police officer first and everything else second, right? And that's what I think this story begins to point out, is that the toxic mindset of the police force in this country far exceeds anybody's race, you know, or ethnicity, like we're talking about with the census, you know. It's a much bigger topic of conversation about the poisoning that happens to anybody that puts on a badge.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's to not make light of the situation or anything, it's like you start putting weight into those, like when they said Black Lives Matter and they're like Blue Lives Matter, you're like, blue is not a life, you freaking moron.
Right.
It starts putting weight into, oh, but some people think that way. Like, genuinely, it feels like that. Like, you know, we joke like blue lives aren't a thing, whatever. But now it's starting to feel that way, that regardless of their race, ACAB, you know, all cops are bastards. It's like, it really feels like once you're a cop, you're like you said, once you're a cop, whatever you were before is irrelevant.
Yeah.
And it really feels that way that, you know, and yeah, like I said, it's some people are going to try, but well, if they were white, yeah, we all know, but we don't need to say that because we know it. We know damn well that we've seen these cases, right? Where something like this will happen and the cops are white and it takes longer.
Right.
And yeah, they're black cops, so they're trying to make, you know, and at the end of the day, it's like, we have to view them as cops. And we have to show that this is not okay, that it's never been okay, and that their race, while it is important to the situation, the more important thing is that they put themselves as cops before anyone else, right?
Right.
And it really is this worrisome thing that you're like if anyone tries to make this more about, like, because the truth of it is that, like, the victim, the way I see it, cops beat a black man to near death. Whatever the cops are, their race is irrelevant at that point. Yeah. Because this was a systemic problem with cops.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that, like, well, they're black, so he's not, like, I've heard of people say, well, he's like, they're black, how can it be racist or hate crime? Yeah, I don't think, like, depending on your surroundings, depending where you grow up, that you can't be hateful towards your own people.
Yeah, hell, or adapt
racist
yeah.
people. Yeah, some of
yeah,
those racist
you adapt
people.
A certain mindset based upon what is being told to you by those that you view as, like, mentors or, you know, as a part of this blue gang that you're a part
yeah.
of.
Yeah, you're one of the good ones. Oh, my God. He's, you know, we always hear that. All you know, you're a person of color and you're surrounded by a bunch of non-people of color. And they say, you're one of the good ones.
Right. Right.
And you're like, yeah, I am one of the good ones. I'm a good boy.
Right.
And so you start,
you
know, it's every race has their own thing, right? Latinos, there's Latinos and then there's the ghetto Latinos. There's the black people and the ghetto black people. And they're two different races. It's like, no, like this is at the end of the day, this was a bunch of hateful, likely racist cops who fed into this idea that they are cops first before anything else. They are blue bloods. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And that this person was a criminal and they sought to they weren't upholding the law. They weren't doing anything. They were violent people who went out of their way to hurt an individual. This is not arresting someone. This is something straight out of a violent like movie where Liam Neeson, who worked at the you know, or Denzel Washington worked at this this police station and he got fired for being one of the good cops and this happened. He's got to get his revenge. Like, this is the buildup for that.
Yeah.
Something that is awful that you really have to talk about and go, like, hey, this was not okay. This happened. This was awful. And this was still a racist issue. This is still about race. This is still about ACAB. This is still about cops. And this is still about blue lives. And I feel like anything outside of that is, like, you're getting away from the point, which is, this is fucked up. This is, you know, I'm sorry to cuss so much. Am I
good? You're good.
Okay, yeah. You know, this is fucked up shit, dude. It's just like... Yeah. You know, I see it. I'm just like, damn, man. Like, and you get so desensitized to it too. You know?
Yeah, that's the scary part.
It's depressing to see it, and you get so used to it. And it's like, we shouldn't have to be used to shootings when you have to be used to these cops. And it's like, how long is it going to take? Granted, things are getting better. I know a lot of people are in this like cynical kind of fuck the cops, fuck everything. But things are getting better. We are bringing more attention to it. They released the body cam footage. They wouldn't tell us when, so we could be caught off guard.
Right.
But, you know, they did release the body cam footage and stuff. So it's like, we are getting to this point where we are eventually holding people accountable. Because at the end of the day, yes, it sucks that these are black men because this is getting, you know, this probably wouldn't have been done with anyone else.
Right.
But they are cops who are bad, who broke the law, who are, I hope, going to get punished for this.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how I view it.
No, 100%. And I think, you know, there aren't enough cops talking about like shunning the cops who do these bad things, right? It becomes too much of the majority of police officers finding a reason to make an excuse for the actions of these cops, right? And and that's a part of the problem, you know, because you have all these other people as well who are just kind of like staffers in connection to having these
they know
jobs
about it.
Right, so they're getting fired for a reason. Well, that's why they're getting fired, right? Because the notion was not, let's do the right thing and hold somebody accountable who fucked up on their job. Let's figure out a way to cover it up, right? And that just shows you the mentality of them being above the law at the end of the day. And I think also, you know, the last thing I want to say on it is, like, it also feels like they came to this quick sort of decision to indict them and the types of charges and releasing the footage because they were scared of more sort of looting and protesting and riots and things like that. And as much as I don't support violence or anything like that, it really feels like that's sadly what it took for George Floyd murderers to be brought to justice, right? Remember, those police were not indicted right away. They were not brought up on charges. And it wasn't until all hell started breaking loose that they felt like they needed to do something. And that's what's fucked up is, like, anybody who argues about, like, oh, of course I don't believe in the police killing people, but also they shouldn't be looting and protesting and rioting in the streets. It's like, sadly, that's the only way you guys fucking listen. When you become scared that it's coming to your doorstep, that is when you choose to take action. Again, I don't condone the violence, but fuck, we live in a country where, sadly, until you put the fear of God into these people, that's the only way they're actually going to do the right things, particularly when it's an issue affecting you know, people of color or disenfranchised people as a whole.
I view it this way, and it's an oversimplification, but this is how I view it. It's like dealing with a bully, right? Mm-hmm. Turn the other cheek, ignore them, right? They shove you here and there, whatever. They make fun of you, whatever. You kind of just ignore it, whatever. They got problems at home, you know, whatever. The daddy don't love and raise them, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then they come and they punch you in the back of the head. You fall forward, bam, crack your nose open.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or they get violent with you, right?
Yeah.
Do you still turn the other cheek? Because in my experience and other experience, the only way to deal with a bully is to bully the bully.
Right.
You know, you can't just let someone bully, because they're going to look at you and go, that's weak. I can take care of that person because I can do whatever I want because they're my bitch. And until you stand up for yourself and you say, no, enough's enough, and do something, enough's enough isn't words aren't going to do it. Right.
Right. Right.
You know, and you could say, oh, and it's like just to get a little personal, I'm dealing with that with my son. My son is the sweetest. He doesn't even understand why people want to be mean, let alone ever being mean. And he's got a bully at school. You know, the kid just walks up and hits him with his backpack and all those stuff. And he's like, you're a weirdo. So my son comes home sad. He's like, someone called me a weirdo, and he said it in a way that wasn't nice. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Peter, A, ignore him. When he calls you something, ignore him. But if he pushes you, you push him back. And guess what he did? The kid hit my son in the face. So my son, one hitter quitter, punched that kid in the gut and knocked the air out of him. And the kid hasn't bothered him since.
Of course.
You know, so it's like,
yeah, he doesn't want to deal with it, right?
So exactly. Yeah. You pick on the nice kid until the nice kid sticks up for themselves, and then you go, oh, whoops. So it's like, that's how I view this. You know, oversimplification, that's how I view this. If peaceful protests work, everybody would be on the street peaceful protesting, you know, protesting. When that doesn't work, and you see it, when that doesn't work, that's when people turn to violence. And that's when people go, okay, you're not listening to me, so I'm going to make you listen to me. Mm-hmm. You know, we see it with teenagers, high school, yet everything. If you don't want to listen to me, I'm going to make you listen to me and make you do something, because this is not okay. Yeah. So to me, it's like, yeah, I don't condone violence and everything, but there are certain steps that we take in life that enough's enough. We have to draw a line somewhere. And this instance is, and we're going to see this, I guarantee you, after this body footage, things are only going to get worse. If this happens again, which it probably will, unfortunately, and it'll probably happen with white cops, and I guarantee you, they're going to take a month and a half to release the body footage.
Yeah.
And people are going to be like, so once again, black cops instantly arrested, going to jail likely. White cops, no. And it's going to get to this point that cops are going to have to eventually, I pray to God and hope that cops are eventually going to have to go, hey, we got to fix this.
Yeah.
Because they're losing their money. And that's Los Angeles. It happened with us. It happened in L.A. They took the LAPD's money. They said, hey, you guys don't want to do your jobs, you don't get your money. So we see it. And I'm hoping that, you know, we do eventually get more of that across the country.
Yeah. And
hopefully sooner rather than later, and hopefully with as little loss of life as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you hope that these instances begin to deter people from doing bad things. And then at the same time, anybody who witnesses it, understanding out of fear of their own livelihood that they can't sit there and cover up for somebody. And you hope that message gets through.
Yeah, right? You're like, I hope they do it at least out of self-preservation.
Yeah.
You'd love to be like, I hope they do it because, you know, they're God-fearing or whatever. They believe in right and they believe in the law. Just do it. I don't care if you're like, I don't want to get fired. I'm ratting that cop out. I'll take that.
Right. You know? Well, yeah, you can't change what's in somebody's heart. You just, you know, strike fear in them to make them do the right thing. That's all you can really do.
Parenting.
Exactly. So, man, we've gotten into a lot of the heavy stuff from this last week. So we're gonna touch on something a bit more positive. Somebody from our community who's been absolutely crushing it. We'll do that in our Mi Gente segment. But first, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma. Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para
para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
I love sharing positive tips with my listeners on everything from health challenges to relationship troubles. Because life happens, baby, but you got this. Hi there, I'm Honey German, and I know we can all use some positive energy these days. That's why I make sure to empower my community, because a bit of motivation and support can go a long way. And luckily, we have State Farm to support us. Like when you talk to a State Farm agent to choose the coverage you need, and they have the options to protect the things you value most. It's the perfect positive tip you need. State Farm is also a big supporter of the My Cultura podcast network, where we as podcast hosts get to share our experiences and stories. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you listen to podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, so on the positive side of things, somebody who is absolutely crushing it, that I didn't really even realize like how she's been a part of so many big projects, right? But you have Zoe Saldana, and she's the first actor with 4 movies grossing $2 billion at the box office, right? Like, it's crazy numbers. I know this is more of your world than mine, but this past weekend, Avatar surpassed the $2 billion mark worldwide for the box office, joining her 3 other films to reach a milestone, which was Avatar, the original one. You had Avengers Endgame, Avengers Infinity War, and she is a 44-year-old Dominican and Puerto Rican actress. She has thrown herself into 2 of the most successful fantasy franchises of all time. She's also in
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, that's a good, yeah, you're absolutely right. She was in that. Also Guardians of the Galaxy. Yep. And she's just, you know, talking about the roller coaster ride of emotions. You know, she says, quote, wow, what can I say about today? It's been a roller coaster ride of emotions for sure. Gratitude for the acknowledgement and absolute exhilaration that I get to wake up every morning and go do what I love. Never in a million years did I ever aim to make history by being in these movies. And she wrote this via Instagram, thanking everybody she's worked with, all the fans and all that. Man, crazy that she's the first actor to do so. I feel like she's incredibly underrated as a whole.
Agreed. And she's, to be clear, she's only 44. She's turning 45 years old this year. She's been in the Pirates franchise. She was in Star Trek. She was in she's in the MCU as a key character. She's probably on her way to joining the DCU now that James Gunn is in charge, and he's like, I want to bring my friends over with me. We're probably going to see her play a huge role in the DC film franchise going forward. And she's in, you know, the Avatar series. Guardians of the Galaxy is coming to an end. Like, it's, and I'm looking at all her film credits, and I'm like, God damn, this woman has a good agent. Like, this woman was like, you know, taken. She's like, I got a feeling about all this thing. You know, she was in Guess Who with Bernie Mac. She's with Anna Shinkuji. Like, she has been making quality film after quality film. And she's only been acting since 2000. 20 wow. years.
Yeah, that, which is crazy. And also as a black woman, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to speak for her, but she's obviously Afro-Latina.
Yeah.
And you know, we hear so much about the racism and see it, you know, blatantly in Hollywood. So, you know, this really is a huge milestone for someone like her to be, you know, reaching that point where she has four movies grossing $2 billion. You know, I think it breaks a lot of the stereotypical nonsense that happens in casting in Hollywood, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. she's not like white passing. There's no excuse to go,
right,
oh, she's Latina, but she's light skinned, you know. She,
right, right.
It's like, and the thing is, I'm reading, right, she, her films, and this is not just solely her, you know, but $13 billion, if you took all of her films and combined them all together, $13 billion. Wow. And the thing is, there's no sign of stopping. Yeah, she's gonna be out of the Guardians of the Galaxy in the MCU. Maybe she might still stay, but she's going to the DC Universe guaranteed. She has three more Avatar films to make, and she's only 45. Like,
I know.
She is, and she's so proud of her Latina heritage. Mm-hmm. She is constantly doing smaller films. She was in, if I'm not mistaken, she was in Maya and the Three as the main character of Princess Maya. Yeah, she was. So yeah, she's done these very proud Latino stuff where she's like, I'm proud of my Latino heritage. I'll play an Aztec princess, but I'm proud of my Afro-Latino-ness and everything in between, man. There ain't a lot of women like her, and for her to be so talented, I don't think a single person could say like, "Oh, she's in the movies," but no one really, like, she's not playing a big role. Have you seen Avatar: The Way of Water?
I have not. I have not seen any of the Avatar movies,
bro. So, like, I'm not gonna spoil anything. All I'm gonna say is she gives an acting performance that makes you cry. Like, and the thing is, she's in mocap, you know, whatever. But man, when she goes, "Oh, this scene, I gotta make the audience cry." No problem. And her performances, and thing is too, let's be real here, she's an action hero. She's been in a lot of quality action movies where she's pulling off these amazing stunts. She's an absolute badass. And how many women can you say that, like, actresses that are like, they're Afro-Latina, they're proud of both the African side and their Latino side, they've done roles in both, which ain't a lot of Latino actors that play Latino characters, you know?
Right.
She's not light-skinned. She's very happy for both. She's very proud. She picks wonderful projects. She's a talented actress. It's like, damn, this woman is really riding high. And it's
crazy though that she's, I really do feel like she's so underrated, because that is staggering to think she's the first actor to do so. But like, you never really hear people talking about her in the same breath as like, you know, who's like the A-list starlets, like the Margot Robbies or Jennifer Lawrence or people like that who are of kind of the same generation, you know. Zoe Saldana is never like one of those first people you think of when you're like, who is the face of kind of like the modern actress. And that, I think that is where kind of that racism lies, but man, it's crazy to see these numbers. And you know, you're talking about the DC universe as well. I'm not super onto all these things. You know, that's why I love having you come on the show to kind of put me onto some game and scratch that itch for those who are. So what is that big shakeup that's happening with the DC universe?
So I'm going to try to recap it real quick and I'll get to the big news that was recently. So
yeah,
it all started with the Nolan trilogy, right? Batman Dark Knight trilogy, right? They were making those movies. That came out of people don't realize this. That came out at the same time that Iron Man did, right?
Mm.
If Batman the Dark Knight would have been the beginning, if they would have started the DC Universe, they would have started at the same time Iron Man and the MCU came out. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that, though. So, because I believe Brian Routh's Superman Returns came out and that flopped and they were eventually going to have those two. That didn't, nothing happened there. So they go, hey, Christopher Nolan, we loved you. You know, I'm always forgetting the name. Christian Bale, they're like, hey, we're going to do a DC Universe. And both of them went, no, thank you. I'm going to pass on that. Yeah. So, They're like, shoot. So they get Zack Snyder, who had just come off of making three flops. He made three movies back to back that flopped. They hire him and they said, you're our new architect of the DC universe. Doesn't read comics, doesn't know nothing. Makes Superman movie that did okay, whatever. He starts making movies and he's very polarizing. The people that love him, love him. The people that don't like him, don't like him. And the movies weren't doing good. They started off financially good and critically bad. But, you know, if the critics don't like it, but the audience doing is making money, no big deal, right?
Sure.
And the numbers started coming down. And the critics and the fans not liking the movie started affecting the prices and how much they were making. And then a tragedy happened with Zack Snyder, and he ended up getting fired/release. And the whole thing ended up falling apart. They had no one in charge. No one was running it. Leads us to about 5 months ago, where DC said, hey, they just got bought by Discovery. Mm-hmm. So they fired everyone at DC for the most part. They said, look, you guys haven't been doing your job. You guys are, you're a mess. So we're going to hire James Gunn and Peter Safran, who are both talented writer, director, producers, who have worked with Marvel, who have worked with DC, who have worked in really amazing projects and given us some really talented stuff. For those who don't know, James Gunn's the guy that made The Suicide Squad, which is one of the better superhero movies released in recent years.
Yeah.
And he made The Peacemaker Show, his first ever TV show he made, which I argue is one of the best superhero shows ever made. He's in charge now. He's in charge of everything, right? So his first thing was like, look, we're restarting everything. We're hitting the reset button. We're starting with a new Superman. We're starting with a new Batman. And everything that's happening with Matt Reeves and the Batman and the Joker movie, Joaquin Phoenix, that's still going to happen. That's still, they can do whatever they want. If they want to run those franchises for 10 movies, let them do it. That's their movies. That's their franchise. We're going to put DC Elseworld on it and they could keep doing what they're doing. But sure. We're going to give you guys a connected universe. We're going to give you guys a cinematic universe where everything's connected, where the shows connect to the movies and the movies connect to the shows. So you got to watch them both. Not like Marvel's approach, which is like, hey, watch your movies. And you can watch the shows, go for it, but it's not a big deal if you don't. Don't worry about it. Sure. DC's not taking that approach. They're not making a bunch of stuff. They're like, look, we're going to release about one, maybe two movies a year, one, maybe two shows a year. They're going to have big budgets. We're getting people from Game of Thrones on this. We're getting people from True Detective on this stuff. We're going to give you really good stuff, and you got to see the shows because they're just as important as the movies.
Mm.
And that's what he's going to do. So he announced Superman's the first big movie coming in 2025. We're getting a Batman, The Brave and the Bold, where Batman has a son, Damian Wayne. And if you read the comics, Damian Wayne is his, like, test tube baby child. Like, his, like, on and off link, Talia al Ghul. Like, pretty much just, like, took his semen and, you know, like, hit a baby without his knowledge. So he grew up as, like, an assassin. So Damian Wayne is this, like, League of Assassins. His grandfather is Ra's al Ghul, like, the creator of the assassins, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, was raised until he was about 10 years old as an assassin, bloodthirsty, kill everyone, violence is always the answer. Then he meets Bruce and he's like, all right, like, I want to work under you. I want to be under you and be your son, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, cool, don't murder people. And Demon's like, oh, but I got a sword. And then, you know, so it's this cool dynamic of that. And that's what we're going to get in the movie.
That's different than Robert Pattinson's Batman, correct?
Yeah, so Robert Pattinson as the Batman will still be doing the Batman movies.
Gotcha.
They're going to bring in a different Batman who's going to be in the DC universe, who's going to be part of this new franchise. They announced the villains. They're going to be doing The Authority. The Authority was a different comic company that made a violent R-rated Justice League, but now DC has the rights to those characters. So DC is bringing them back. And the whole first chapter is called Gods and Monsters. So we're going to get monster flicks. We're going to get creature features. And we're also going to get superheroes. We're going to get a show about Green Lanterns. It's going to be Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart. They're going to be like detectives with Green Lantern powers, a down-to-earth kind of thing. We're getting a Game of Thrones-style Wonder Woman, Themyscira Island kind of thing. We're going to get a whole bunch of cool stuff. And it's all building up to that. And there's still more movies and shows to be announced. But to me, I'm like, this is what they need. This is what we needed. I love DC and I love Marvel. I love them both. Mm-hmm. But this cohesion, this passion, this love for the comic books. James Gunn was like, look, we love this comic book series. That's what this movie is going to be based off of. We love this comic book series. That's what this movie is going to be based off of. So, and they're not rushing it. 2025, that gets them 2 years to make the first movie. He's already been writing it for a few months. And I really think, like, if you're ever the person that was like, DC movies don't do it. I don't like it. You know, whatever. James Gunn is a huge DC fan. One would argue probably a bigger DC fan than he's a Marvel fan. And so I think we're going to get a lot of really cool stuff. So I think as a nutshell, that's kind of what's happening in DC. It's a lot. I'm sorry. There was a lot to cover, but
no.
It was a long road for DC fans and it's a long road for, but it's a good one.
No, that's awesome. I appreciate you kind of bringing me up to speed and anybody else who's super into that kind of stuff as well. So man, always a pleasure having you on the show. Where can people follow you and all that you got going on?
Yeah, I'm at The Storytime Guy. So The Storytime Guy, wherever you go, whether it's YouTube, whether it's Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, I'm on everything. I have an email, storytimeguybiz@gmail.com. It's B-I-Z, not The Storytime Guy, just storytimeguybiz@gmail.com. Email, message me, whatever you want, guys. I love talking to you. I do Latino representation. I do Aztec mythology and folklore. I do this month, it's Black History Month, so I'm going to be doing a lot of Black History Month content. A lot of folk tales from John Henry and all these other African and African-American folk tales. I really want to put a focus on, you know, our hermanos, our African-American brothers who mm-hmm. are fighting this fight, who are leading the path for us, who the Afro-Latinos that don't get talked about enough. This month is for them. I'm, you know, so this month it's going to be a little different from my usual content. I'm going to be doing less Latino stuff. And still pop culture, still talking about The Last of Us and everything, but still, I really want to put a focus on this month, really highlighting content creators and highlighting films and movies and shows and folktales, mythologies, that for my African-American audience and everything, because y'all deserve more than a month, but this is the month you guys got, and I'm happy for you guys, and really want to help them expand and everything, and it's just so, yeah, that's what I'm doing this month.
I love it, bro. Love it, love it, love it. I'm going to definitely be joining you and doing some... you know, Black History Month content this month. So I'm really excited about it as well. My bro, always good having you on. Of course, I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. See you, man.
Man, big shout out to my guest this week, Matthew Torres, the story time guy. Always love having him on the show. Friend of the show, of course. And I love that he brings on, you know, a different energy as far as like talking about comic books and entertainment in a way that I normally wouldn't. So he puts me onto some stuff that I wasn't really sure of myself. So I always enjoy that. And with that said, let's hear from y'all real quick. I have a particular comment to a particular question that I asked that I want to get to for our Ask a Gringo segment. But first, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Ask a Gringo.
I have a question.
All right, so for this week's Ask a Gringo segment, I just want to kind of put it out there and see what people were feeling in regards to the Tyre Nichols murder, right? And I know it's been at the top of a lot of our minds a lot of our news feeds, right? And I just kind of wanted to get the feelers out there and see what people were thinking and what we're talking about, you know. And I know we're running a little bit long this episode, but I wanted to get to at least one of the responses that I got. And I simply just told people, you know, thoughts and vent on the death of Tyreek Nichols. And one comment or response in particular I found interesting, just for a quick topic of conversation, was from @cross_soul. And they said, "That shit looked personal and it was sickening. I don't think we need defunding, but we need change." And yeah, I think this is definitely an interesting topic of conversation, right? Because a lot of people say defund the police, defund the police. And yeah, I don't know if we need to defund the police department per se, right? I think obviously there needs to be a drastic overhaul of policing as we know it right now. I think that, yeah, in particular towns, like I'm thinking back to where I grew up in high school and all that, a small town in New Jersey, and you know, all the cops at the time were driving around these brand new Dodge Chargers for no reason whatsoever. In that particular case, they probably should have been getting a little bit less money thrown towards the police force. But I think in general, I think the police have a particular role to play in our society, and an important one at that, right? If something were to happen to me, if there was something to happen at my home, I would want the police to be there as quickly as possible, you know. But I do think that the problem lies with the standards that we have for police in this country. I just think, you know, to many of the people that I went to high school with, let's say, that are cops now in small towns in New Jersey, you know, these are people that didn't really have any other direction in their life. So they just said, fuck it, why don't I become a cop? It's easy enough, right? And I think that there lies the problem. You have people out there doing probably one of the most difficult jobs in the world, where they have to be, you know, physically able to do the job. They have to mentally be able to, you know, think in a split second. You know, they carry a deadly weapon, and they also have to know the law in order to uphold it. And I think that because the standard is so low in this country for becoming a cop, you know, it's very rare that somebody is able to check all of those boxes, even though to me it should be essential, right? So I think, in my opinion, you know, all police should have to go through at least a condensed version of law school so that they're far more versed on the law. I mean, I think physically, you know, we see it where it's like, you know, you have out of shape cops, you know, and it seems like they stop doing physical testing once you leave the academy. That has to go. I think there has to be far more of a background check. I think it can't be somebody with just a high school diploma that barely, you know, graduated high school that is now entrusted with a deadly weapon and is having to make life and death, you know, responses you know, life and death decisions, you know, especially when it comes to the lives of others. You know, I think there's so many things like that. And I also think, you know, there has to be this level of accountability, right? This whole gang mentality that the police force kind of has, where they protect their own, you know, even when their own are doing something blatantly wrong. Like, that has to change. That culture of protecting bad cops has to change. And if you are one of the good police officers, if you're somebody who's actually there to help and to make actual change, you know, you should be on board with that, you know, because it's just making you look bad. It's just making your job harder. And I think that all has to be a part of it. And my other thing, I was talking to my father about this the other day, like, I think that the police union and unions in general shouldn't be allowed to endorse candidates, because it makes a lot of these people running for candidacy in towns and cities across America, you know, they sadly, because they want that power, are then at the beck and call of these police unions, right? And they're not going to implement laws or make it more difficult for police, because they know that they won't get that backing when the time comes for them to run for re-election. And that, I think, is a part of the problem. You know, the unions have too much power, and it allows this nonsense to continue to happen. And on top of that, like, when these police officers get fired, many of them just go and find another job in a town nearby, right? I think there needs to be some sort of universal system that you know, that police, you know, units around the country have to look at and say, why was this person, you know, why did this person leave their job? What is the reason? Were they you know, dishonorably discharged, right? Just like the military has, you know, and that should be a stain on your record. Like if you are let go for something like a case like this, even if you're not tried in court, like that should be a dishonorable discharge that then bars you from ever holding a badge again, right? There needs to be some sort of universal system within that. And then of course, fast tracking police being held accountable. You know, this case right here should not be the exception where the cops were brought up on charges very quickly and brought up on very serious, you know, charges, including murder and kidnapping, right? Like that needs to be the norm. It can't be like what happened with the George Floyd murder and those cops were walking around for months. And it wasn't until there were, you know, the viral video and people were in the streets protesting that they decided, okay, maybe we should charge and arrest these guys. You know, there needs to be a fast track to holding them accountable just like you would any one of us, you know. And maybe even, and I'm just throwing ideas out here, like there needs to be for every you know, murder that is done at the hands of police, every time somebody is you know, dies in the presence of a police officer, there should be some sort of, you know, external investigation that happens, right? An independent investigator for every single case, not just for particular ones that seem like they need it, you know. And I'm just sort of speaking kind of like from the top of my head. Maybe there is that in certain places. I'm looking it up right now. And looking it up, it looks like certain places have enacted a law like that. Wisconsin has enacted a law requiring independent investigations of officer-involved deaths, right? And that needs to be universal. It shouldn't just be on a state level. That should be a federal level. You know, every police department of the country should have to follow that protocol. You know, there's no reason not to. If you are doing your job and you have nothing to hide, then you should have no problem with an independent investigator looking into the matter. Again, these are people's lives. These are people's families, you know. I was watching clips from Tyre Nichols' funeral, man, and it's heartbreaking to see his mother talk about, you know, him and their family, and you can't help but get emotional looking at people talk about somebody that they truly loved who is no longer here for no good reason. There's no reason why that man should not be here today, and there just needs to be a large scale change. And again, I think that, you know, it's not abolish the police. I think that we've seen, you know, certain places try to adapt things like that, and it just doesn't work. I think the police do have a necessary role in our community, but there needs to be a complete overhaul of policing as we know it in this country, and a larger amount of accountability needs to be placed on the shoulders of those who hold a badge in this country. Now, with that said, thank y'all so much for chiming in on this particular topic. I know it's a heavy one. At DJ Dramas on Instagram. I usually do this for each and every episode. And with that said, let's quickly, man, just recap and tie everything we talked about today in a neat little bow in a segment we call Conclusion Stew. But first, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Time for conclusion soon. All right, so we read through a lot of things on today's show. I know it's running long. I'm just going to quickly kind of, you know, summarize it all. You have this woman who was, you know, charged after posing as a student at a New Brunswick, New Jersey high school. I think this obviously poses a lot of fears about what she was doing there. Was she trying to get kids for some sort of sex trafficking ring? And just in general, the lack of concern for this school because of the fact that, you know, it's a primarily Latin student body. I mean, there's no other reason why it would be getting that. You know, again, as somebody from this area, New Brunswick is a pretty major city. And the fact that this school is, you know, performing so badly, and obviously, you know, it's because they have a lack of resources in a city that shouldn't have that. And it seems like people are turning a blind eye because it is a school primarily made up of people of color, of kids of color. And it just is a terrible example of, you know, the nature of this country, the white supremacy. And again, if this were a white high school, we'd be hearing far more outrage about this story. I don't think the Board of Ed would be fighting to not have its students use their voices. It's just, you know, we live in a different world, sadly. When you have the tourists now in Mexico climbing the pyramids, again, this is the colonial mindset, the idea of white supremacy, the idea that our history is worth less, you know, the things that we value are worth less, and that you, you know, as a white person are superior and can essentially do whatever the fuck you want. And I thought Matthew brought up a great idea where, you know, maybe they don't have the bigotry, the hatred at the forefront of their mind, but there is this, you know, unconscious racism that makes them think they can do whatever the fuck they want, and that they can come to the places that we call home, and that they can, you know, not have to follow the rules, that they are somehow above it. I think that's the colonizer mindset, the white supremacist mindset in full effect. And it's just like, you know, the poison that has been seeped into white people on a global level that still kind of affects the way that they interact with the world around them today. Now we have the Biden administration proposing to let people choose Hispanic or Latino as a race. I think we dove into that pretty deeply. You know, things like this matter. You know, this is a step in the right direction to making sure that our voices are heard. When I had the activist Carmen Perez on the show last year, she was talking about how, you know, the idea of over-policing in the Latin community and police brutality in the Latin community is something that is grossly underreported. And oftentimes that deals with the fact that, you know, we're not seen as Latin or Hispanic. We're marked down as white, or we're marked down as Black. And that skews up the numbers to really know if something is an issue for our community. So things like this really do matter. Now, moving on to the Tyre Nichols death. I mean, it's fucking tragic. And I'm tired of having to feel like I'm like a broken record, just like speaking about the same types of stories and just inserting different names and different cities. And that goes for police brutality. That goes for, you know, death at the hands of a mass shooter. It's just awful. A 29-year-old Black man is no longer with us, no longer with his family, for no good reason whatsoever, because these officers had an ego trip and thought that they could just beat the shit out of a person and have no consequences, right? And again, it just goes to show you that that the color blue matters before anything else, right? Because these were five black officers. Of course, you had a white officer, and there's two other officers, one white, one unidentified, who are also linked to this whole situation. But it just goes to show you that once you throw on that badge, you become a part of this gang that comes before anything else, right? This is now, you know, your identity. You're no longer a black man. You are a police officer, and you will, you know, abide by the rules of policing in this country and think that you are above the law because you put on that badge. And it's just, it's awful. We need a whole overhaul of the policing in this country. And then lastly, you know, on a positive note, you have Zoe Saldana as the first actor with four movies grossing $2 billion at the box office, which is a huge, huge deal. She deserves it. She's an incredible actress. And, you know, not to like put a negative spin on it, but again, I want to point out the fact that I feel like we don't speak about Zoe Saldana in like the A-list actress category like we would with some of the examples that I talk about. You always see somebody like Margot Robbie or always see somebody like Jennifer Lawrence at the forefront of films and consider like this A-list actress. But Zoe Saldana is a part of movies that are grossing gigantic numbers at the box office. She obviously is a part of that. And her name's not being spoken in the same breath. So I think while this is huge because she is an Afro-Latina and she breaks all of the Hollywood stereotypes of someone who has to kind of assimilate in order to find success, I think also had she have been white, we would be hearing her name far more as like one of these A-list celebrity types who's up for every role. But man, big congrats to her. She's definitely, you know, setting the path for everybody else out there. And like what Matt said, she always puts on for her community. I think she even for a while had like a blog or it was like a website that primarily focused on like Latin content, Latin issues and things like that. So she's doing the work. So a big shout out to her. I think it's amazing to see. And man, that's it. Big shout out to Matthew Torres, the Storytime Guy, once again for hopping on the show. Thank you so much if you made it this far. I know we had a long episode today, but sometimes you just get into it and you gotta let the conversation go where it's going to go. Make sure you check out my other podcast, The Street Stoic, wherever you find podcasts. It's a daily short 10 to 15 minute podcast Monday through Friday. And I'm combining hip hop lyrics and quotes with ancient Stoic philosophy, trying to bring you, you know, your daily shot of inspiration to get your day started. So definitely go check that out. Like, review, comment on it. We're trying to build that bad boy up. So that's a real big help if you can go and support that as well. And man, with that said, thank you so much for tuning into today's show. On Monday, real quick disclaimer, I'm going to be dropping the pre-order for my first book. And this is going to be the first in a series of four books. So we're going to be doing a subscription for those who want it. I'm going to be giving away some free shirts along with it. And we're going to be dropping four books this year. This is the first one in that series. You'll be able to pre-order it on Monday. So stay tuned for that on my social media at DJ Dramos. Dramos.com will have the info as well. And I'm really, really excited about it. So I hope that y'all will partake in that. It's got like some of my own personal photography as well as just, you know, my heart poured out on paper. It's essentially stuff that I pulled from my journals, from just like thoughts that I was stewing on, things that I think could be helpful to inspire others. It's just a collection of different things, always with the goal of inspiring and more specifically, trying to bring some presence to our lives and trying to give you some tactics on how to view life in a positive way. So that's coming on Monday. So be on the lookout for that. And now I'm done. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Have an amazing weekend and I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Peace.
Life as a Gringo is a production of the Michael Dura Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos
para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.